For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It's May 27th, and in Shmuel Beis, we're in Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17, and we are up to, I believe, Pasuk Chaf Hei. Is that right? 25?
Chaf Dalet.
Chaf Dalet. 24. Okay.
Chaf
Dalet. 24. Last we learned about Achitofel and the fact that his advice was not taken, and now he's been killed, or he died. And now we're going to have the showdown between David and Avshalom. David came to Machan Noyim. Avshalom over Asayardin. Avshalom crossed the Yarden. Who v'chol ish Yisrael imo, he and all of the Jewish people with him, meaning the army of the Jewish people. Now they crossed the Yarden, which is where David is, and they're going to have a battle. The exact place of the battle is going to be significant, but we won't get to that until we get to the next parak, the next chapter. Ves Amasa sum Avshalom tachas Yoav al atzava. And Amasa Avshalom put in place of Yoav in charge of the army. Amasa becomes Avshalom's general. Yoav was David's general. Yoav left. Yoav went with David. So Avshalom put Amasa in place of Yoav. Now, who is Amasa? So we get a very detailed description of Amasa's family. The Amasa is Ben Ish, he's the son of a man. That's true for most people. Ushmo Yisra HaYisraeli. Amasa's father's name was Yisra HaYisraeli. Asher Bo'el Avigayel, that he had a relationship with Avigayel, Bas Nachash. So Avigayel is Amasa's mother's name. This is not the same Avigayel as David's wife Avigayel. This is a different Avigayel. And Yisra HaYisraeli had a relationship with Avigayel, the daughter of Nachash. And this woman, Avigayel, is Achos Tzuruya, is the sister of Tzuruya, Ein Yoav, who was the mother of Yoav. That's rather confusing, isn't it?
Okay.
So let's draw the.
Is that right?
Let's draw it. Okay, I think this will work. Okay, so we're trying to describe who is Amasa. We'll put it in English so we can follow it. Who is Amasa? Amasa. I don't know who that is. So Amasa is the son of a man whose name is Yisra. Yisra, not Yisro. Yisra.
Yisraeli.
Yisraeli. It's actually important that it's Israel. We'll get to that later. He is married to someone who I can't write because. We'll try this. Okay, we'll put the man in blue in him.
Yes.
Okay, so he is married to a woman named Avigayel, not to be confused with David's wife. David's wife, right? Avigayel. Avigayel is in turn the Avigayel is the daughter of a man named Nachash.
Is that her father's name or her mother's name?
That is her father's name.
It's a snake.
And Abigail is the sister of a woman named...
Oh, I see.
Tzeruya. Who is the mother of a man named Yoav. So Amasa is replacing Yoav. Ignore the different colors. That wasn't a purpose. Amasa is replacing Yoav. And you want to know who Amasa is? Amasa is the son of a man named Yisra, who is married to a woman named Avigayel, who is the daughter of a man named Nachash, who is also the sister of a woman named Tzeruya, who is the mother of a man named Yoav.
So they're cousins.
Which means Amasa and Yoav are?
Cousins.
First cousins. They're first cousins. Their mothers are sisters. Amasa's mother Abigail, Yoav's mother Tzeruya, are sisters. They happen to have a very illustrious brother, these three.
Tzeruya's David's sister?
No. Okay, their brother's name is David, as in Hamelech.
Oh.
Oh. Pasuk doesn't tell us that.
But I thought, David is from Yishai.
Correct. Nachash, his other name is Yishai.
Ah.
That's right.
And who was David's mother?
David's mother, I don't know her name. It would be the same mother as Tzeruya and Abigail. As far as we know. We don't know the Yishai.
So I thought you weren't allowed to marry a woman who has the same name as your mother, but it's okay with your sister.
Okay. There is no rule in the Torah that you can't marry a woman who's the same name as your mother. There is a general practice not to do it because of something that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid wrote. He wrote a lot of things, but there were some things were more accepted than others, and one of the things was to avoid marrying a woman with the same name as your mother. But it's not a halach in the Torah. It's perfectly...
It's all fine.
It's all fine. And anyway, they get around it very easily. They just... Yeah. They don't...
Or
they call her by saying just what the woman is called. It's not what her name technically is. Anyway, so we get this whole description over here of who this man Amasa is, who's replacing Yoav. And it seems that the description is ultimately in order to tell us how he's related to Yoav. Because it goes through this entire... It could have just told us that Amasa was put in charge of the army in place of Yoav, and Amasa was Yoav's cousin. That's what it could have told us. But instead, it kind of meanders here through the family tree. Amasa is the son of a man whose name is Yisra, who had a relationship with Abigail, who is the daughter of Nachash, who also has a sister named Tzeruya, who happens to be the mother of Yoav. So, obviously, the Navi, it's important to the Navi that we know all of this. And it's important that the description happens in this way. If it just would have told us that Amasa was the cousin of Yoav, that wouldn't have been good enough. We have to know more about Amasa. We want to know who this man is. Now, I'm going to give you a bunch of information over here, and we'll hopefully put together the pieces of the puzzle to figure out as much as we can of what the Navi is trying to do over here. Now, I have to admit up front that I don't have a solid explanation why every single detail is here, but we're going to try to paint a picture because that's what the Navi is obviously trying to do over here. He's trying to paint a picture of this man, Amasa. He's trying to tell you, now that you're being introduced to a new character, Amasa, I want you to know as much as we can tell you about him by studying his family tree. Now, why do we need to know about this man, Amasa, other than the fact that he's about to become a significant player in the battle between Avshalom and David? Amasa is going to lead the army that is going to lose the battle with David. Okay. But we need to know about Amasa because we're going to find later that Amasa is not just some person who was skilled in war, who Avshalom needed a general. He didn't have Yoav, because Yoav followed David. So he needed a general, so he picked Amasa. We're going to see later that Amasa actually is eminently qualified to be a general of the Jewish army. In fact, he may even rival Yoav as being either as qualified or perhaps even more qualified than Yoav in being the general. Yoav, we know, is the general of David. And Amasa is a very strong rival to the point where later on, remember, Amasa is commanding the army against David. Nevertheless, after the war with Avshalom is over and Avshalom is killed, David is going to want to replace Yoav as being general of his own army, because Yoav is going to disobey David's order in regard to leaving Avshalom alive. And because of that, David is going to replace Yoav. And when he replaces Yoav, he's going to replace Yoav with Amasa. And ultimately, Yoav is going to kill Amasa. Amasa is going to be one of the people that later on, Yoav is going to be held accountable for killing. Remember, he killed Avner, and he's going to kill Amasa as well. Amasa, besides being a great warrior, but as we've explained before, in the days of David HaMelech, the great warriors were simultaneously the great Talmidei Chachamim, that they went hand in hand, where today you don't see that. Today, a great Talmud Chacham is not necessarily a great warrior, and a great warrior is not necessarily a great Talmud Chacham. But in their day, when the world operated more according to Torah, and especially the Jewish people operated more according to Torah, so the great Talmidei Chachamim also were the great warriors, and the great warriors were also the great Talmidei Chachamim. We've explained this before, and Yoav was of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, which is why he was the general of David. Amasa is also of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, and he is therefore also a great warrior. And just as Yoav needed to use trickery to kill Avner, if you recall, he wasn't able to kill Avner if he just would have challenged him to a fight. He needed to trick him by talking with him about a halacha. Anybody remember which halacha Yoav asked Avner?
How would a woman with no arms perform Yibum?
Right, how would a woman with no arms perform Yibum, which forced Avner to get down and show a woman pulling off a shoe using her mouth, because she would have no arms to do it, and that enabled Yoav to be able to kill Avner. He's similarly going to have to use trickery to kill Amasa, because Amasa is an equal of Yoav in battle, which means he's an equal of Yoav in Torah scholarship as well. And so here, the Navi, in introducing us to Amasa, and we'll talk much more about Yoav killing Amasa when we get to that part. So I don't want to get sidetracked with that now. But in describing who Amasa is, the Navi needs to give us his credentials so that we know that he is not simply a cousin of Yoav, which makes him a nephew of David. He's not just that, which is in itself a wonderful credential. But in addition to that, you have more people in his family tree. So who are they? So first of all, he's the son of a man named Yisra HaYisraeli. Now, anytime you see the term Ish in Tanakh, in Scripture, it always means a man of distinction. It doesn't always mean for good, but it always means of distinction. There's something special about this person that makes him stand out above other men. And so if he uses the term Ish, as I said before as a joke, most people are the sons of a man. So it clearly doesn't mean the son of a man. Everybody came from a father somewhere. So it means that his father was a man of distinction. And his father's name was Yisra HaYisraeli. In Divrei HaYamim, Chronicles, when Amasa is described, it calls him the son of a man whose name was Yisra HaYishmeeli. Instead of Yisraeli, it says Yishmeeli. So one could be tempted to think that Yisra was a convert, that he was from Yishmael, and he became Jewish. One could think that. It might even be true. I don't know. However, the Gemara gives us another explanation for why he is called the son of Yisra HaYisraeli, and in Divrei HaYamim he's called the son of Yisra HaYishmeeli. I'm going to share that with you momentarily. But first, I want to go through the rest of this family tree. That he had relationship with Avigail. Well, we've heard of Avigail before, but it's a different woman. We've heard of Avigail, the wife of David. This is Avigail, the sister of David, the daughter of Nachash. And Nachash is Yishai, David's father. And she is also the sister of Tsruya, the mother of Yoav. Now, the sister of Tsruya, the mother of Yoav, Tsruya has three sons, Yoav, Avishai, and Asael. Asael was killed by Avner way back in the beginning of Shmuel Beis. Yoav we know about, and Avishai ben Tsruya, he was the one that we mentioned before. He's always going to show up in times of defending David. He was the one who wanted to remove the head of Shimi ben Gera when Shimi ben Gera was cursing David. She has three sons of immense distinction, great Tamidei Chachamim, great warriors in their own right. And so Tsruya is remembered as a woman who raised three great, we'll call them Tamidei Chachamim / warriors, which go together. So she didn't just raise one or two, she raised three. That says a lot about Tsruya, that all three of her sons were such incredible Tamidei Chachamim. So this woman, Avigail, is the sister of Tsruya. The Navi does not tell us that she was the sister of David. That the Navi doesn't mention to us. Now, her father, Yishai, is called Nachash. The Gemara tells us, and I've mentioned this to you before, that four people died only because of the Nachash, because of the snake. Because since the Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, they ate from the tree they shouldn't have eaten from, because of that, human beings have to die. Now, most people have to die because they've done Averos. And unfortunately, an Avera means a person's going to die. But there are four people who never did an Avera their entire lives, which is, the longer I live, the more incredible it becomes, right? So it's unbelievable. They never did an Avera their entire lives. So who are the four? So the four are,
Enoch.
What's that?
Enoch?
No. Well, he may, Chanoch maybe, but he's before the Mabel says that. Binyamin, the son of Yaakov, he's one.
Sarah? S-E-R-A-H?
No, Sarah is not counted as one of them. She never died.
Oh,
these are four who
she never died at all.
Sarah did not die, no.
Yishai.
Yishai, the father of David, apparently. Yishai, the father of David. Who else? So we also have
Eliyahu.
No, he's still alive.
Oh, it, right.
We also have Amram, the father of Moshe. And we have Kilov, whose other name is Daniel, the son of David. Not the Daniel that we learned about at the later on, who lived during the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But David has a son, Avigail, David's wife. Her son is Kilov / Daniel. He never did it on Vera either. So the four are Yishai, David's father, Kilov / Daniel, David's son, Binyamin, Yaakov's son, and Amram, Moshe's father. The Gemara says three out of those four, we do not have a pasuk. There is no verse that says it. It is a tradition that we have that was handed down from generation to generation, but it is not in the pasuk itself. But one of them is explicit in the Navi, and this is it. Says the Gemara, why is Avigail's father and Tsruya's father and David's father called Nachash, when his real name is Yishai, to tell you he only died be'ito shel Nachash. He only died because of the ito, the advice of the snake, that the snake got Chava and Adam to eat from the Eitz Hadas. And that's the only reason why he died. So here in establishing Amasa's credentials, the Navi almost backhandedly establishes Yishai's credentials, meaning that the Navi never told us that Yishai never did an Avera. It would have been just known through tradition, the same way we know that Amram never did an Avera, and Binyamin never did an Avera, and Kilov / Daniel never did an Avera. We only know that because it's something that was handed down to us. Yishai would have been the same thing. The only reason why the Navi chooses to tell us that Yishai never did an Avera is not in order that we should know that David's father didn't do an Avera. And it's not even that we should know that Yoav's grandfather didn't do an Avera. It's in order that we should know that Amasa's grandfather never did an Avera. That's, in that context, is how the Navi tells us that Yishai never did an Avera, which means the Navi's trying to tell us that if you want to understand Amasa and who he was, you have to know that he came from a grandfather who's one of the four and only four people who only died because people have to die. But he never did an Avera his entire life. When you understand that, then you will begin to understand who Amasa is. The Navi didn't feel compelled to tell us that when he had explained who Yoav is. For Yoav, we had other words to describe him, that he was, if you'll recall, we learned that he was a Midbar, that he used to give away everything, that his house was absolutely clean from all types of Averas that have to do with theft and have to do with immorality. Yoav was completely clean. We learned about that before. But for Amasa, if you want to know about him, you have to know that his grandfather never did an Avera in his life and only died because of the snake. And that is Yishai. You also have to know that Amasa, his mother Abigail, is the not only the daughter of this man, she's also the sister of Tzeruya. Just as Tzeruya raised three great Talmidei Chachamim sons, she is the only woman I believe that we know of in Tanakh who successfully raised three giant Talmidei Chachamim. I'm trying to think of other examples like this where we have a woman who raised three. I mean, I guess you can say Aaron's wife who raised four great Talmidei Chachamim, except two of them died young. I guess you could say that she raised four, Aaron's wife. But here we have a woman, Tzeruya, who raised three giants of Talmidei Chachamim. And so Abigail is her sister. And if we're emphasizing that she's her sister, we're saying that Abigail also raised a great Talmud Chacham in her son Amasa. She took a page out of her sister's book and raised Amasa the same way that Tzeruya raised Yoav, Avishai, and Asael. And you have to know that that Amasa is the cousin of Yoav. So Amasa has all of this in his family, which is telling us you should know that Amasa is Abigail's son, who is the sister of Tzeruya and the son and the daughter, of Nahash. So Abigail, who raised Amasa, takes with her the influences of her great father, Nahash slash Yishai, her great sister, Tzeruya, and raises Amasa with those influences. So there is where Amasa is coming from. We have not yet, though, explained Yisra. Here is called Yisraeli, and elsewhere called Yishmaeli. So we're about to explain that. Yes?
When it says that he took her, does that mean that she became his wife?
So that is one of the things I don't know. I don't know why it's clear the Navi deliberately chose to use this language. It's not the typical language to say his wife. It could have said Amasa's mother. And the way it says it, it doesn't sound right. And I don't know I don't know the answer to that question. The way it reads, it sounds like almost that it was out of wedlock.
Yeah.
It says Asher Ba'al Avigail. But it would be difficult to say that given the fact that we're talking about such great tzaddikim. So I don't know the answer to why the Navi words it in this manner. I fear that it is just due to my lack of scholarship. I believe it is known, but I did not come across the reason why. Now, why does it say Yisra HaYisraeli here, and in Divrei HaYamim it says Yisra HaYishmaeli? As I said, we could have understood that Yisra was a ger, that he started as a Yishmaeli and became a Yisraeli, which again is possible, but the Gemara does not say that. That doesn't mean it isn't true, but the Gemara gives a different explanation. The Gemara, though, does not attribute the title Yisraeli and Yishmaeli to Yisra, but rather to Amasa himself. That Amasa, in some contexts, is called a Yisraeli, And in some contexts, it's called Yishmaeli. When is he referred to as a Yishmaeli? Baruch atah Adonai Elohim Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nivra. So for this, I take you back to a story which we had in Shmuel Aleph. Tonight is going to be a bunch of throwbacks. We're going to have a whole bunch of connections to all kinds of things we've had before. This goes back to Shmuel Aleph, and it goes back to that famous story of David and Goliath, when David really first makes his mark in killing Goliath. So you'll recall that at that time, when David goes out to kill Goliath, Shaul says, he turns to Doeg, and he says, "Who is this person? Who is this Nar?" He says to Avner, excuse me, "Who is this Nar? Who is this person?" So Chazal say, what do you mean? He didn't know who he was? David was his lad. He was with him all the time. What do you mean he doesn't know who this is? So the Gemara explains that when Shaul gave David armor to wear, Shaul was a very tall, strapping man. David was not. And the armor of Shaul should not have fit David. And yet it fit perfectly on David, which seemed to indicate that David was going to somehow usurp Shaul, which is why David took off the armor, because he didn't want to have Shaul feel bad about the whole thing. So when David was going out, Shaul said, "Find out who this man David is. I know he's from Yehuda, but does he come from Peretz or does he come from Zerach? Which line of Yehuda does he come from? If he comes from Zerach, I have nothing to worry about. If he comes from Peretz, then he could be the future king." And when he said that, Doeg said, "Before you ask if he's fit to be king, ask whether he's fit to join the Jewish people. Because he comes from Rus, which we just read about on Shavuos. And Rus is from Moav. And the Torah says, Lo yavo Moavi bikal Hashem, that a person from Moab cannot join the Jewish people." To which Avner responded, "No, it's Moavi, velo Moavis. Only the males of Moab are precluded from the Jewish people, not the females from Moab." To which Doeg said, "No, it is Moavi v'afilu Moavis. It includes the females." As you know, the Torah frequently speaks in the masculine form when it means both male and female. And so Doeg insisted it meant both. And Doeg brought a proof, because the entire, the Avner brought a proof that it should only refer to the males, not the females, because it says, that the reason why the Moabites were excluded from the Jewish people is because they didn't give us bread and water when we left Mitzrayim. Said Avner, it's only the men who are blamed for not bringing out bread and water, because the men are the ones who are to go out. Women are not expected to go out into the open, and therefore there's no blame on the women for not bringing out bread and water. To which Doeg said back, the men should have brought bread and water to the men, and the women should have brought bread and water to the women. And since they didn't, the women are just as much to blame, and therefore they're also excluded from the Jewish people. And Doeg, who himself was a great Talmud Chacham, who unfortunately fell precipitously and ended up losing his portion of the world to come because of the incident of killing Nov, the city of the Kohanim. However, at that time, Doeg was still considered of the great Talmidei Chachamim, and Doeg was going to win that debate. And it would have been ruled that David was excluded from the Jewish people. Not forget being fit to be king, it would have been concluded that David couldn't even really be part of the Jewish people because he came from Rus. And that's what was going to be ruled right there. The Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, was going to rule that way. At which point a man stepped forward, and the man said that, "I have a Kabbalah, I have a tradition from the Beis Din of Shmuel, Haramasi, from the Beis Din of Shmuel, that it is a halacha l'Moshe miSinai. It is a direct transmission from Moshe at Har Sinai all the way down, that it is Moavi, velo Moavis, only the Moav men, not the Moav women, are excluded from the Jews, and the Moav women are included if they would like to convert, and therefore David is kosher. The man who stepped forward is Amasa. Amasa ben Yeser, Amasa stepped forward, and it says, Hayishmaeli, the Yishmaeli. The Gemara says, why was he called Hayishmaeli? Says the Gemara, because he did a Maisa Yishmael. He did something like the Arabs do, which is, he drew a sword like the Arabs do, and he took the sword, and he said, Kach mikublani, this is my transmission from the basin of Shmuel, who got it from the Talmid Chachamim before him, who went back before him, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. This is a direct transmission that it is Moavi velo Moavis. Only the men are excluded, not the women. And anybody who would like to disagree, I will run through with the sword, which is a Maisa Yishmaeli. He took the sword and he said, if you would like to argue with me, you will feel the point of my sword. So that's why he's called Ben Yisra HaYishmaeli in one place instead of HaYisraeli. The Gemara is saying this as a compliment, not as something derogatory. It is considered a compliment that Amasa knew when to draw his sword. And over here, where there was a threat to the very royalty, the very line of the Jewish people, the ultimate line of Mashiach was being threatened by Doeg, he stepped forward and set the record straight that this is a direct transmission. It cannot be debated. The commentaries, particularly the Beis Halevi, explain that as long as there's no halacha le Moshe miSinai, there's no direct transmission from Moshe Rabbeinu, then something can be debated and it can be overturned. One Beis Din can rule one way, later another, if there's another Beis Din that's greater than the previous Beis Din, they can overturn what the other one said. It can be debated back and forth. But once you have a transmission directly from Moshe Rabbeinu, it can no longer be debated. And Amasa was going to settle the matter once and for all, that there is nothing to talk about, that David is kosher, and therefore there is nothing to talk about, and he can be king, and therefore Mashiach can come from David and everything is fine. And he used his sword to emphasize the point.
Why isn't Pinchas called Yishmaeli then?
That's a good question. I don't know. I also don't know why call him a Yishmaeli instead of an Edomi. Because Edom is Al-Char B'Chatichya, you'll live by your sword. Right? So I don't know why specifically Yishmael. I'm not sure. Yeah.
You know, one difference in the situations is that with Amasa, it was a debate. It was a point of law. They were arguing about something. Whereas with Pinchas, you know, he didn't stand around and argue with Zimri. He just came out and killed him.
No, but he waited till Moshe. He said, what's the ruling on this? He did ask Moshe for debate, the ruling before he did
but
it.
But he didn't debate with the opponent, you know. He didn't debate with Zimri, the propriety. I'm just offering this as a...
No, but there is that difference. It's true. He did go to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he said, what's the halacha? And... Moshe didn't remember, and Pinchas told him, Moshe Rabbeinu, you taught us that if a man behaves this way, that kanoim pogimbo, that zealots attack him. So Moshe said to him, Karana deigros ha'iu lavi parvanka, the one who reads the letter, he should be the one to carry it out. So you remembered, you should carry it out. So Pinchas went and killed him. But it is true that he didn't debate it with the one who needed to be attacked, which was Zimri. That's true.
I think it's interesting that we see this in our day, that and have ever since, the 600s, that if you want to disagree with the Arabs, they'll draw their sword.
Or we could say the same with the Crusades.
I don't think they drew their swords too.
Yeah. Well, you become like us or you disagree.
Right. So I'm not sure why the emphasis on Yishmael over Edom. I'm not sure about that. But here as well, Amasa, who was referred to as Ben Yisra HaYishmaeli in the context of defending David, here he is called Yisra HaYisraeli in the context of taking over the army which is going to attack David. Now that seems to be somewhat difficult to understand. Here, he's called the Yisraeli. If we're going to assume that Yisraeli implies some sort of peaceful approach, as opposed to, and that's when he drew his sword, he's referred to as Yishmaeli, which means if he's called Yisraeli, I assume it means without drawing the sword. Yet in this context, he's being put in charge of an army that is meant to attack and ultimately destroy David.
That's when he's Yishmaeli.
Here it's Yisraeli.
He's going against David.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say. Yishmaeli was in the context of defending David's lineage from Rus. Here he's called Yisraeli in the context of leading an army that is ultimately going to attack David.
Seems kind of backwards.
Seems backwards.
You know, and also, why don't we know Tzruya's husband's name?
I don't know. It would seem to me that Yoav is always called Yoav ben Tzruya, Avishai ben Tzruya. They're always called ben Tzruya. It seems to me that the Navi is telling us, if you want to know how they became who they became, it was not because of their father. It was because of their mother.
Right, but with Ishai, I mean, if his wife hadn't done what she did, there would have been no David to begin with. And yet,
true.
It's always David ben Ishai.
Yeah, but we can't ignore the fact that Ishai never did an Avera his whole life. Right, so David coming from Yishai, we'll assume that that's very significant. Here, it seems that Tzruya wasn't just that she bore the children. It seems that she actually raised them to be the great Talmidei Chacham that they were.
Right, but you had Yocheved and Amram. Amram again didn't ever sin, right? But you're leaving out Yocheved, who raised three. Gedolim.
Yes. That's true. She raised Moshe. Yeah, she raised Moshe and Aaron and Miriam. That's true. The three leaders of the Jewish people were raised by.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, of course that's good. That's good. But what I'm saying is this. We always find throughout the Torah that if you mean to include men and women, you'll use the men. You use the masculine form, you'll refer to the men. Whenever you refer to the masculine form or to the men, it is not necessarily to the exclusion of the women. It's either both or only the men. But it is. You don't know just from the fact that it uses the masculine or the fact that it refers to the man. Whenever you see only the women or only the feminine used, that is to the exclusion of the men. Because if you're going to mean both, you're going to use the masculine. So that's what I mean to say. When you say Yishai, you're not excluding his wife necessarily. We just don't know.
When you say Tzruya, you are excluding.
That's
her
correct.
Husband.
That's correct. When you say Tzruya, you're excluding because it's so unusual. So that's why I'm saying that it would seem to me that if Tzruya is emphasized constantly with Yoav, he's always called Yoav ben Tzruya. He's always called Avishai ben Tzruya. Always. So that would seem to indicate that Tzruya was the main reason why they became who they became. Now, it does seem kind of backwards that why would he be called HaYisraeli over here when we're talking about putting him in charge of an army that's going to attack David?
Yeah. To me, it does make sense that it would work like this. That in the first instance, he was called Yishmaeli because of his zealousness in defending his point of view in an argument with the sword. That is a particularly Yishmaeli kind of trait. And there was no question in that setting of treachery to the Jewish people. This was simply zealousness backed up by the sword. You know, here's my position and I'll cut off your head if you don't agree with me, you know. Whereas in this situation, the Navi doesn't want to bring out that aspect. He wants instead to emphasize the fact that even though Amasa was Avshalom's general and was attacking David, he was nevertheless a loyal Jew. And this helps lay the groundwork for David later accepting him back into the fold.
Okay, so we're going to find later that those who backed up Avshalom are going to be taken to task. We already know that Shimi ben Gera, who cursed David, he will be taken to task eventually for it. we're going to find Avshalom himself is going to be taken to task. We already found Achitofel is taken to task for backing up Avshalom. Even Yoav is going to be taken to task because there's going to be an indication that he really was tempted to follow Avshalom. In fact, you really see it here in this pasuk, because it says that Avshalom put Amasa in place of Yoav in charge of the army.
Like he was going to be there.
Yeah, that, what do you mean in place of Yoav? Yoav was David's general. What do you mean in place of Yoav? That's like saying that Avshalom put himself as king in place of David. He was usurping David. Of course, everything that was David is now going to be Avshalom's new cabinet and new appointees. So it almost seems to indicate that really Avshalom would have put Yoav in charge, but Yoav went off with David, so he put Amasa in charge. We're going to see about that later. But Amasa himself, what is he all about? Are we going to assume that this was a rebellion on Amasa's part, that here he was willingly usurping David? Or are we going to give him a pass and say that this was done with loyalty, and it was his own not realizing that in fact really David should be king and not Avshalom? It's hard to give him a pass because everybody else that goes with Avshalom is blamed. But in the end, David himself gives Amasa a pass and puts him in charge of his own army. Now we'll see later that we're not really going to give Amasa a pass, because ultimately Amasa is going to be killed by Yoav. And even though David is going to disagree with Yoav's killing Amasa, but remember, Yoav being the great Talmid Chacham that he is, even when he's wrong, there is a reason why he behaves as he does. And that reason is not to be negated. There is some reason for it. Avner, when he was killed by Yoav, it wasn't baseless. There was reason to kill Avner. David said Yoav was wrong for killing Avner, but it wasn't like there's no way at all to justify killing Avner. There was some justification to killing Avner. And Yoav does defend himself for being the Goel Hadam, for avenging the blood of his brother Asael. With killing of Amasa, again, Yoav is going to defend himself because Amasa is the general of Avshalom, who's in charge of the rebellion. The rebellion means that they have usurped David HaMelech. So to turn around and put the general who's in charge of the rebellion in charge of the regular army, that's not necessarily the greatest move, and Amasa may be somewhat culpable. So we're going to see later that we're not going to say that Amasa was completely innocent in this appointment of being the general of Avshalom. Nevertheless, the Navi using the term Yisraeli seems to be telling us that Amasa was measured. He knew when to use the sword, and he knew when to not use the sword. He was not a hothead. That's the, if you could have thought that Amasa, who came forward with the sword and said, "You want to argue with me? You'll get the sword." Maybe that's the way he always behaved. If that's the way he always behaved, then you can't give him credit for drawing the sword in that context, because that's just who he was. Mm-hmm. When you do what you always do, you don't get credit for it. You get credit for being able to decide, this is a time when I speak up, this is a time when I keep quiet, this is a time when I draw my sword, this is a time when I don't draw my sword. Amasa was that kind of person. He was a person who knew when to draw the sword, and he knew when to sheath the sword. And therefore, he's called Yisraeli over here, that even as the general of Avshalom, he was not a hothead. He was a person who could be reasoned with, he was a person who could talk, the person who was able to see both sides of an argument. And therefore, after Avshalom is defeated, he is able to come around completely to David's side, even though he was mistaken over here in going with Avshalom's side. So we get this broad picture of Amasa. There are very few people that, when we're introduced to them, we're given this level of description of his family. We'll be introduced later to a man named Benayahu ben Yehoyada, who is going to be the right-hand man of Shlomo HaMelech. He'll be the general of Shlomo HaMelech. He will get a description similar to this. We're going to get this whole long description of who he was. Like almost, it seems almost tangential. Almost it's like the Navi can't stop talking about him in the introduction because of who he was. So here Amasa gets that kind of introduction here with all just getting everything about him. The Israeli versus Gishmaeli, the fact that Avigail, his mother, is the daughter of Yishai, who's the Nachash, who never did an Avera, who's the sister of Tzruya, who raised Yoav, the whole business. So we get a very broad picture of who this Amasa is. Almost strikingly, he's going to play almost no role at all in the battle. As much as he's given all of this print over here, the battle is they're going to lose. And it's very little that we're going to get about Amasa in the battle itself. The battle is going to be more about Avshalom being killed than about Amasa. And really, Amasa takes center stage when David appoints him in place of Yoav later on. So when we get up to that, we'll have to then re-examine Amasa.
Can I ask one more question? Is this Machanayim the same as the place that Yaakov named?
It seems that is the case. It is on the other side of the Jordan River, which means it's on the east bank of the Jordan River in present-day Jordan.
And north of the Yabok.
He crossed the Yabok. Yeah, north of the Yabok. That's right, north of the Yabok. That's right. Pasuk Chavah, verse 26. Vayichan Yisrael v'Avshalom Eretz HaGilad. They encamped, Yisrael and Avshalom encamped in the land of Gilad, which, again, as I told you, is going to be significant where they are, but we're going to get to that later, the more specifically where in Gilad they are. Vayihi kevot David Machanayim. It was when David came to Machanayim. Vishovi ben Nachash, they Rabbas b'nei Amon, Shovi the son of Nachash from Rabbas b'nei Amon, Umachir ben Amiel Milo Devar, and Machir ben Amiel from Lo Devar, Uvarzilai Hagiladi may Roglim, and Barzilai Hagiladi from Roglim. All these people came and met David. Now we're going to talk about these three people in a moment, but what did they bring to David? Mishkov, Visapos, Uchliotzer, V'chitim, u'saurim, v'kemach, v'koli, u'fol, v'adashim, v'koli, u'dvash, v'chema, v'tzon, u'shvos bakar. That's a very long list of supplies, food, all kinds of things that are needed for a ragtag army. Higishu l'David, they gave this all to David, v'la'am asher ito le'echol, and the nation that was with him to eat. Ki amru, for they said, ha'am ra'ev, the nation is hungry, v'ayef, and tired with Same and thirsty by Midbar in the Midbar. What are all these supplies? So, Mishkav would be things to lie down on, and Sapos would be different types of utensils, because when you're running away, you don't have necessarily the utensils that you need, even cups or whatever you need to drink, anything you need. Klayotzer are other types of utensils. And chitim asarim is wheaten barley, the kemach, the kali, and flour, and kali is roasted grain. Upol are, I believe, beans. Va'adashim and lentils. Again, another word, another kali. I neglected to see why that was repeated. I'm sorry. The Gemara says he brought him two types of kali. They brought two types of roasted grain. And honey.
Kali isn't vinegar? Didn't Boaz give Ruth something dipped in kali? Bread dipped in kali?
Yeah, it's not kali. It's Vayitzbat, yeah, it does say kali. No, it was the roasted grain dipped in vinegar. The other way around.
Okay.
But kali was the grain that was dipped in the vinegar.
Oh, okay.
And honey, and cream, and sheep, and cattle. So all these supplies. In other words, they gave to David and his men what they needed in order to be able to wage the war that they're going to wage in the next parak in Yud Ches, in chapter 18. Now, who are these three people Shovi ben Nachash from Mirabas Bnei Amon, Machir ben Amiel from Lodover, Barzilai Hagiladi Me Roglim. So, you'll recall that right before the story with Bathsheba, remember David was looking to do chesed. Remember, we talked about this, that David was trying to do chesed with different people. And first he tried to do chesed with Nachash, the king of Ammon, who died, and his son Hanun took over. And he wanted to do chesed with Hanun, and he sent emissaries to Hanun to wish him condolences on the loss of his father. And remember that the advisors of Hanun said, you think that David is just trying to wish you well. He's coming to spy out the land over here. Remember, they shaved half their beards and they cut off their clothing from the waist down and sent them home in shame. And then David turned around and attacked Rabbas Bnei Amon. That was one chesed that David tried to do. Another one was, he tried to do chesed with the children, anybody left from Yonah's son, Ben Shol, from Yonah's son's household. And there was one person left, and that was, remember who that was? Mephibosheth. And remember, Mephibosheth's slave's name was, we're going to have this, it's going to keep coming up. Mephibosheth's slave's name was Siva.
And he called Mephibosheth Lodavar.
He called him Lodavar, with nothing, empty headed, ignorant. And instead, we saw he was Lodavar, low with a vav. He had everything. He ended up being a huge Talmud Chacham, became the Rebbe of David HaMelech. So, if you want to see the back in Perek Yud, chapter 10, actually, it's Perek Tes, chapter 9, Perek Tes Pasuk Dalid, verse 4. It says, David said to Tziva, Vayomer Lamelech, Eifo hu, where is your master, Mephibosheth? Vayomer Tziva Lamelech, Tziva said to the king, Hinehu beis, Machir ben Amiel. He is in the house of Machir ben Amiel, below Devar. So Machir ben Amiel was the person who was hosting Mephibosheth back in Perek Tes. Rashi tells us that Shovi ben Nachash is the same person as Hanun ben Nachash, the very same person who shamed the emissaries of David, and then David turned around and attacked Bnei Amon, Rabbas Bnei Amon, and ended up destroying it. So Shovi ben Nachash and from Rabbas Bnei Amon and Machir ben Amiel from Lo Devar, they are two of the three people here who bring all the supplies to David. And Barzilai Hagiladi from Roglim. Now, Shovi ben Nachash is not a Jew. He was the king over Amon, and he's from Rabbas Bnei Amon. Barzilai Hagiladi is not a Jew. We will learn about him later. David has a great deal of gratitude to Barzilai Hagiladi, as we'll see later on. He is one of the people who he instructs his son Shlomo to always take care of because of the chesed that Barzilai Hagiladi does with David. Machir ben Amiel, I don't know what his nationality is. But here we have the people that David wanted to do chesed with before the story with Bathsheba, they are the ones who now come and repay him. Strikingly, Shovi ben Nachash, if he is in fact Hanun ben Nachash, it is an incredible thing that here he shamed the emissaries of David. David turned around and decimated him and his army. Yet here, when David is on the run, he does not use the opportunity to attack David, which he could have done. Instead, he comes and bolsters David. So the chesed that David does with Hanun, or the attempted chesed, is repaid here. I wondered if the reason why his name is Shovi instead of Hanun is from the Lashon of Teshuvah, that Hanun ben Nachash here realizes that what he did before was wrong and now makes it up to David in supplying him. Machir ben Amiel, we don't know much about him, but he was where? He was where the where Mephibosheth was. David did chesed there with Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth's host, Machir ben Amiel, here repays the kindness to David. Barzillai Hagiladi does not seem to have a reason to be involved over here, which is, I think, why later on David is going to have so much gratitude to Barzillai Hagiladi. Now let's think this through. David did those chasadim before the story of Bathsheba. We asked at that time, why did David, what's he doing over here? Why is he, it's like almost like he's searching for chesed. So we pointed out at the time, because David knew that it was time to build the Beis HaMikdash, but he couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash. That means the next step is to have the child who is going to be the Mashiach, who will build the Beis HaMikdash, which means he has to ultimately marry Bathsheba, but he didn't have Bathsheba yet. He knew that something was missing. So he knew that since the whole essence of royalty is chesed, David needed to try to fill in whatever gaps of chesed were lacking in order to establish the new king. And therefore, he tries to do chesed with Ammon. Since Ammon was the nation that took care of David's family when he was on the run, and he also wants to do chesed. It was David's brother. David's brother, who ran away to Ammon, was saved by Ammon. And he wants to do chesed with Yonasan's family, and he does so with Mephibosheth. After he does those chasadim, the truth is he's ready to now marry Bathsheba and have Mashiach. Unfortunately, because of the events that we described, that he wants to be tested, he ends up going about it in the wrong way and sins with Bathsheba. Because of the sin with Bathsheba, the final punishment to David for the sin of Bathsheba is this rebellion of Avshalom. This is the final and the worst of all the punishments that David has, that his very own son rebels against him. We're now at the most important point of this rebellion, in which the tide is about to turn, and David is going to emerge victorious from this rebellion. When he emerges victorious, the way that he emerges victorious is those very same chasadim that he did to prepare to be the father of the Mashiach. They are the ones who turn around and bring the supplies through which he and his army are going to emerge victorious from Avshalom. So it comes full circle. David had prepared with chesed to bring Mashiach into the world, and that was appropriate. He did that right. Then, unfortunately, he got derailed with the mistake he made with Bathsheba. And now we've gone through all kinds of bumps in the road, including the worst one, which is the rebellion of Avshalom. But as David is emerging from this rebellion of Avshalom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings the same ones who he did chesed with before, they bring the chesed back to him. As if to say, okay, you've paid the price. Now, David is going to, from here on in, he's going to be on an upward trajectory to be reestablished as king. And even though his son is not Mashiach, his son who was supposed to be Mashiach is one of the ones who died, but Shlomo is going to build the Beis HaMikdash, and ultimately Mashiach is still going to come from David, it's just much later, not at that time. And therefore, these are the ones who bring supplies to David through which he will now defeat Avshalom in battle. Yes.
Okay, so before Ishai was called Nachash because he hadn't sinned, and we're to be reminded of that. Now we have another Nachash.
Yes.
He did already sin.
Yes.
So now I'm confused.
Yes, okay, so now I noticed that. Yes, I noticed that as well. This Nachash is a different person entirely. This Nachash is the original king of Ammon who took care of David's brother. And his name was Nachash, not because he never did a sin, right? He was a snake, right?
But he still took care of David's brother.
He still took care of David's brother. So I noticed that as well, and I did not have a strong... You're right. It cannot be coincidental that the Navi uses the name Nachash twice within three psukim and referring to two different people. Clearly, that has significance. But I did not have a strong...
What's David's brother's name?
I don't remember which brother it was. He has eight... seven brothers, right. I don't remember which one it is that is saved by Ammon.
Do they have the battle in this place where David is in camp?
No, the battle is going to take place, we'll see later. Wait a second. Yair Ephraim. We're going to talk about this. This is going to be a very significant name. It's going to be a throwback to something that happens in Yehoshua, which we didn't learn about, but we will talk about him in Sashem next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.